All right, let's do this. How are you, what the fuckers? What the fuck buddies? What the fuck nicks? What's happening? I am Mark Maron. This is my podcast. Welcome to it. How are you doing? I'm getting through it. Those of you who know, I've got the COVID. I'm about a week into it. And fortunately, I'm very grateful. It's been a mild but annoying experience. It's not like anything I've had, I don't think, in my body before. It's similar, but there's some weirdness going on in my head. I've not had a temperature. I have not had aches or pains. I have not had night sweats. I've not had trouble breathing. I'm very fortunate in all that. And I will thank the vaccine for those benefits of having this and not being too horribly compromised, though I am going crazy. I guess I'm going to do a straight up 10-day lockdown quarantine for myself. I'm already, what? So today's Sunday. I'm going to test this morning, being Monday. We'll see how that goes. I do want to try to make my shows to this weekend, but I can't really do that unless I get a negative test. So it's stressful for me because I don't want to, the timing of this is not appropriate. I'm mad that I got it and I can't quite shake that anger. Even though millions of people have gotten it, triple vaxxed people, I still somehow think it picked me. And that's just the way my fucking brain works. I'm learning a lot about my brain over this weird week of true quarantine. Let me get into this for a second. Peter Dinklage is here on the show. And most of you, I don't know, everyone knows him. He's in this new Cyrano movie, which he did as a stage musical that was written and directed by his wife, Erica Schmidt. And he's here to talk about that and other things. Yeah, I've been busy during this quarantine. I've been building things. I put a smoker together. Some company sent me a smoker. It's pressuring me. Oklahoma Joe sent me a Bronco. I mean, they didn't pay for that plug, but I'm excited about it. They asked me if I wanted one. I said, yeah, but now I'm going to have to up my game. No more Traeger. Well, I have the Traeger to do that Traeger cooking. That's just a pellet grill. It's basically a convection oven run on smoke from wood pellets that you don't have to manage. Really, it's got a temperature. It's hooked up to the Wi-Fi. This fucking smoker is a real smoker. So now I've got to figure out how to do that. I've got to season the thing with coals, and I got to figure out how to work those vents and do that thing. I don't know what I'm going to start with. I don't know when I'm going to start. I can't leave the house, so it's not immediately. But I'm excited about it. I put it all together calmly, focused. Yes, I did it. I also watched both versions of West Side Story. I watched the new West Side Story because I got a screener of it. And it's spectacular. And I don't remember the old one. When I watched the new one, I knew a lot of the songs just because they're kind of in your genetic makeup. Somehow, if you lived a certain life, I don't know which life it is, but I would say that a lot of people who listen to this probably know at least four or five of the songs from West Side Story without remembering whether or not they actually saw the movie. I believe I saw it when I was a young kid, but the new one's just great. And I watched them. I did sort of a side-by-side thing to see what Spielberg brought to it and what Tony Kushner brought to it as the writer, reworking that story or adding to the story or deepening the story by infusing a class element into it and also a race element into it that was sort of broader and deeper than the one that was in the original. And obviously in the new one, no brown face. But one of the interesting decisions, I guess, I don't know who made it, was that a lot of the new one is actually in Spanish and there's no subtitles. So deal with it, white people. But Kushner's script is outstanding, and the way Spielberg shot it was, you know, beyond masterful. Because no easy trick to do a musical, and the original one was so spectacular, it's fucking colors. Anyways, highly recommend it. These are my COVID quarantine movie reviews. I got through about 14 minutes of the new Macbeth. I'll go back, but I can't focus, man. I can't follow it. I mean, I get what's happening in the story, but I'm missing most of it because I'm just lost. And that's just me. And no matter how many of you tell me I got to hang in there, I don't know. Denzel seems great in the first 10 minutes. That's my review of Macbeth. Look, if Cohen wants to come on, who is it, Ethan or Joel? Joel. If he wants to come on, I'll watch the whole thing and I'll memorize part of it. If that Cohen brother wants to come on, talk about it. Or his partner, Francis McDormand. Yeah, I'll memorize it. I'll memorize parts of it. I'll memorize the speech, right? The famous speech. There's got to be one. I'll memorize it. And I'll assess it deeply. So I didn't get through that one. Been practicing guitar. I've been cooking and monitoring my health, taking my temperature, checking my oxygen. Have had no fever, have had no aches, have had no pains, but the dreams have been crazy. I woke up in a panic a couple of times. I'm just going to bed early, and I usually wake up around 3 or 4, and it takes me about a half hour, 45 minutes to get to sleep, just spiraling. And then I started thinking about, like, I was just in a dream and I woke up in a panic because I couldn't, you know, I didn't think I could save somebody from underwater. And, you know, I was screaming, but it was underwater. And then I realized that, you know, when you scream or talk in a dream out into the real world, it's just, it's muted and garbled and it doesn't make sense. And you feel like you're being held back when you realize that, when you wake up to the sound of your own voice crying for help in a dream. It's just this horrible. And it's a horrible feeling. It was horrible what was going on in the dream, but then realizing that there was no one in the room anyways that was going to help me. But then waking up to that noise and realizing that Sammy and Buster, Smushy and Booster were on the bed, and you know, that must have caused them some aggravation, but they weren't going to help me. The being aloneness is sort of amplified here. And for some reason, outside of dreaming, I tend to wake up and start going over my life. Going over my life in the middle of the night as people I know pass away and as I sort of seemingly successfully fight an illness that has been terrifying to all of us for 2 years. You know, obviously there's been a shift and a change and a different strain and a vaccine and medicines available. And, you know, that panic has lessened, but, you know, there is the residual trauma effect of the terror of the last couple of years and also the recent deaths of people I know. I think the idea of sleeping scares me to some degree. But the dream, man, I had this dream and it was like I was at some sort of party or a house or whatever. And I think it was Timothée Chalamet and like, you know, there was this sort of a room. It was like a sauna, but it had this plunge pool, but the plunge was like 20 feet and it was very narrow, but it was tiled and it was water, you know, but you kind of fall down this hole into this tiled plunge pool, I guess. And Chalamet's like all fucked up or high on something. And I think he said to me, he said, I wish somebody could weigh me now with all the experiences I'm having now. Weird, right? And then he kind of fell into this plunging pool and he hit his head once on the outside, once going down, and he went down into the water and there was blood coming out of his head and he was down at the bottom under the water. He wasn't moving. He wasn't coming up. And I went down into the water, but I didn't have the room and I was getting claustrophobic. And it was like, I got scared for myself. Could I get out? And like, I couldn't move my arms and I couldn't grab him and pull him up successfully. And I was awake. Terrible. I'm sorry, Timothy. I'm sorry, man. I hope you're okay. It didn't look good. It didn't look good from where I was sitting in the dream. I tried, though. I tried to get in there. And I woke up. Sorry, man. So, listen, if this was helpful, press 1. I don't know. That's what's been going on. You know, I've been very panicky, and I just I feel okay. but I don't feel perfect. And I imagine I'll get through this. Today is a week. So Peter Dinklage, I was very excited to meet him. Cyrano, his new film, will get wide release in theaters beginning February 25th. Peter is nominated for the Critics' Choice Award for Best Actor. This is me talking to him here in the studio garage. Sadly, to be honest with you, I did not watch the Game of Thrones, but I tried to cram it yesterday. It's really too much.
The weird thing is there's more than 24 hours of Game of Thrones.
There is.
You can't cram it in a day.
Yeah, you can't like
you would think. I don't know, maybe.
How many hours?
Can you cram I Love Lucy in a day?
Maybe. I don't know what you can
it's
cram.
It's a half hour, so that would mean like 50. I'm bad at math. So 50 some odd episodes. There's more than 50.
It's so funny. I can't. Cramming anything's a bad idea.
Cramming.
Like I was looking at your.
Physically cramming something in.
Like crammed a.
Sometimes it's a good thing.
Though. Yeah. If you. Like I crammed an In-N-Out burger, a double into my face. Yesterday on the road, and it wasn't a good thing, but it was great.
While you were
moment.
Driving?
No, I didn't. Oh. My
brother-in-law has a funny story about cramming a Big and Tasty, which I think is a fast food joint somewhere.
Yeah.
I think maybe Pacific Northwest.
And, right.
I'm not going to embarrass him any further.
That's right. Oh, okay.
There was no restroom. Let's leave it at that.
Oh.
So the Big and Tasty cup became the Big and Tasty.
Wow.
Yeah. You know, he's...
We don't have to go into too much detail, but something went in there.
Yeah.
I mean, that's kind of a cute story, or it's really like a nasty story.
It's not a good story. It's neither. You're not recording yet.
Sure I am.
Oh, shit.
But yeah, cramming, because I was looking at some of the stuff on you, and I realized you did some Narnia movie, you know? And
ooh.
I was like, no, I tried to
cram. You tried to cram in the...
When I was a kid...
The Christianity?
We were assigned, you know, through an entire year, we were reading... all the books in Narnia, and I read none of them.
You went to
them.
A Christian school?
No, it wasn't. It was just it was actually kind of a progressive school. But I think it was before anybody was really associating it with specific Christianity. Yeah, I don't know why it was assigned, but I know I was supposed to read them all.
I wonder if that was tacked on later.
Well, no, I mean, he is a Christian. I read his book on grief. I mean, he's unabashed.
But if it was exaggerated later on by the people.
Maybe. I think he was of the, okay Christian ilk. they got kind of a bad rap now, but I think he's old school.
Right.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah. I know when we did it, it didn't feel Christian until...
I think it's metaphorical, but it's in there. But the point
was... I didn't feel very Christian making that movie.
Well, that's good. Do you ever feel Christian making movies? In general?
I was under a lot of prosthetics and working yeah. with young people. And,
yeah.
Remember at one point they divided up between the actors and the creatures, and apparently I was one of the creatures.
Uh-huh.
But all of us actors were playing creatures.
Right.
So it was sort of a class system on that set. Wouldn't fly today, I don't think.
Really?
I don't know. I'm not
The class system between actors and creatures?
I was a creature,
So there was no reason to be Christian.
Exactly.
Creatures shouldn't have religion in general. It's part of the reason it was invented.
There's going to be a problem when they do, when they finally find it.
Well, it's, with technology. So... Yeah, but anyways, I tried to cram all of them in a day. That was the point. Don't get too far from the mic, or take it with you if you're going to...
I can't lean back. I can't relax.
No, you can pull it back. The thing moves.
This is going to get...
Yeah, it goes right with you.
Oh, excuse me. Oh, yeah.
See that?
Look at that.
No one gets that either. I don't know why I knew you would. No, I'm just sort of like, just move it to your face. And they're like, what? Look at the structure of the boom. It's designed to move around
every
way you can.
Yeah.
Yeah, so that was another cramming story. So you're from Jersey?
Originally, yeah.
Me too. I like to do the Jersey bonding.
I didn't do my research on you.
That's right. I'm genetically Jersey, which is something people have heard me say forever. Both my parents are from Jersey. My grandparents are from Jersey.
But you're not.
I was born in Jersey.
You were born in Jersey. When did you leave?
I lived the first 6 years of my life in Jersey.
There you go.
I always went back to Jersey. Okay. Jersey,
how
part
do you
of me.
Pronounce S-A-U-C-E?
S-A-U-C-E.
What do you put on pasta? Tomato what?
Oh.
Quickly, without thinking.
Sock?
You put tomato socks?
Oh, sauce. Sauce.
Sauce.
Why? Okay. What do you say?
No, if I'm tired, I'll say sauce.
Sauce. No, I didn't come out with a bad jersey.
Because we're educated now. We've lifted.
Maybe.
I don't know.
But I wouldn't know if
No, we weren't educated. We were made fun of. I went to a school in Vermont, college in Vermont.
Oh, that's where that is.
My friends from the Pacific Northwest.
Yeah.
Who apparently they have the perfect American dialect up there. There's no dialect.
In Vermont?
No, in the Pacific Northwest. My friends from there.
Yeah. A
couple of very smart friends. They just said that, and they made fun of me for saying sauce.
Sauce?
And coffee.
Coffee?
Yeah.
Those are
the two. I've been ridiculed.
Tomatoes?
Tomatoes. Hey, that's more like Sinatra. Look at them tomatoes.
Look at those tomatoes.
Yeah.
It
was mocked out of me.
Oh, I see.
Yeah.
I don't think I ever really had it because I moved away when I was, you know, seven or eight years old. I grew up in New Mexico. But Jersey is, I love Jersey. I've grown to love it. I don't go back much, but it used to be the brunt of a joke. And then you realize, like, there's nothing wrong with New Jersey. It's a great state.
Yeah, it depends on... There's some people. Who are wrong in New Jersey, and there's
wrong
like
people everywhere.
Yeah, everywhere.
And people are garbage.
I might be one of those people.
Well, you're going to be wrong some days. What part of New Jersey?
North New Jersey. I was born at the shore.
Yeah.
And the school system in the '60s wasn't very good back then.
Yeah.
So my mom moved us north.
Yeah, that's where I'm from. Pompton Lakes. That's where my roots are. Pompton Lakes, New Jersey, Passaic County.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Morris County.
Yeah. It's pretty, though. You don't think
it is. A lot of parks.
Is your mom still there?
My mom's still in the house I grew up in, yeah.
So you go back to Jersey?
Sometimes, yeah.
And you live in New York?
Not enough, according to my mom.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
But you're not far from Jersey. I don't know. I can't. Well, I'm
in Brooklyn, so I sort of say, Mom, why don't you just come to Brooklyn? Because you're by yourself
and
now.
And does she come?
Easy for you to get in the car.
Yeah.
I got the dogs and the kids, and it's a little bit of a event. Yeah, sometimes.
So
she thinks it's not New York. When I lived in Manhattan, she's like, this is New York City. She doesn't get crossing two rivers to get.
I got to be honest with
is
you.
Is this still New York? I don't think it is.
Yeah.
She misses when I lived in the West Village. And that's.
Well, yeah, it's exciting coming from Jersey to the city.
Yeah.
Brooklyn is just sort of like it's a bunch of buildings.
It's like Jersey again.
Yeah.
It's like the other side.
It's like the coastal. It's like Newark. Yeah. Yeah, they don't can't tell the difference. It's like going to Long Island. Long Island's Long Island. It's not New York City.
It's not New York City.
Yeah, no.
There's no skyline.
New York City's New York City. You lived in the West Village?
Yeah, and Chelsea and all over.
Wait, how old are you?
52.
Okay, so I'm 58. So we're kind of similar.
But we never crossed paths.
No, that's weird. Yeah. I was in New York in like 89, 90, 91, 92. I went away for a year and then back 95 through 2000.
Yeah.
Yeah. Never saw you.
Yeah, you'd remember if you saw me.
I would.
No. I was just staying out too late back then.
That was it?
That was it. Just not doing much, but staying out too late, smoking too many cigarettes and not really knowing what I wanted to do. Thought I was a writer.
A writer? What did you start?
A writer. You didn't have to respond like that.
Like what?
What do you mean?
Well, everyone thinks they're a writer for a while.
Everyone thought I was a writer?
No, everyone thinks they are. People in the arts, you know, at some point go through the writer stage. You have to land on something. Like what was your first passion?
Writing.
Really? When you were a kid?
Yeah. I think so.
I think I was like guitar and
I see.
Yeah. But I can take it as a hobby.
Right. Writing is a hobby, right?
Kind of. But you want to, I think when you're an artist, though, or you are aspiring to be an artist, you want to be recognized for your shit.
Do people, does it need an audience? If that's the question, if you write and nobody reads it, are you a writer? If you play your guitar just for
I'm just asking, what was your intent? I mean, when you saw yourself as a writer, didn't you want people to read it?
Not really, because it wasn't very good.
Did you write in high school?
I did.
Yeah.
You know, you start smoking weed and
you
read Charles Bukowski like everybody else and Sam Shepard.
Yeah. Sure.
As a straight 16-year-old.
Yeah.
You know, if you're not into the musicals at that age or into the darker stuff.
Yeah.
The dark arts of...
And then you start drinking.
Yeah. You know, and you really... You're tortured.
Yeah, of course.
And you have to write about
it. You're playing it. Yeah, I did that. When did you start? Did you smoke cigarettes? You smoke cigarettes.
Yeah, stole them from my dad's ashtray.
Yeah?
Down in the basement. He used to smoke in the basement. Go down there.
What did he smoke? What kind?
That's a good question. I was Camel Lights for 30
Camel
years.
Camel Lights. 30?
Yeah, from 16 to...
Shit. Me too.
Whatever, man. 40?
I switched up a lot, though.
Always Camel Lights.
I was like from 14, 15 years old to like 39, probably 35. Yeah. No, 35.
Yeah.
Oh, that's not as long as you, actually.
When your wife quits, you quit.
You quit. Because
you're kissing an ashtray.
Was it tough?
Mm-hmm.
I was on nicotine lozenges for over a decade.
Stuff. No. It's weird to see people smoking now, though, because a lot of people still do it. Not as much as when we were
It is weird. When they're older and you're like, come on.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, enough.
It just isn't good.
It
smells. You just don't. You don't ever think that you could have done that.
Yeah.
Is what it is.
Yeah.
When that's all it was.
I know, when I smell it, I still enjoy the smell and stuff, but I know when I see people my age smoking, I'm like, there's nothing good there, man.
No.
And it never ends.
No.
There's no end to it until you stop it.
But then they just are pickled and they'll outlive us.
Nah, that's not true.
Really?
No, man. They drop dead of heart attacks and cancer.
I think it's DNA.
Sure,
I think
a lot of it.
I think most of it is DNA.
I don't know.
Isn't it?
I don't know. You're given. Is it? I think a lot of it.
You see a 95-year-old chain smoking his whole life. How do you explain that?
That example, I think, is, you know, I'd really like some numbers on those things.
I'm sure there are.
Yeah.
I've
heard that story. You know, there's always the example of the guy. But maybe he had good genes. Maybe he got lucky. But that doesn't mean anything.
You just happened to catch him smoking that one cigarette a week, and it's you're just, thinking he's only smoking.
You know, you're processing toxins. You know what? You know what's your body? What's it made out of? You know what I mean? How much can it take? Is what it comes down to. So you're Bukowski-ing in high school,
right? And then you get really into it in college.
Where'd you go to school? Where in Vermont?
Bennington, Vermont.
I feel like I know that school.
Bennington is known for writers. There's actually a podcast, I think, going on now about the times at Bennington during the...
Oh, that's right.
Reddy Stenellis, yes, Donna Tartt.
Yeah, yeah. I just saw an article about that. Yeah.
Apparently, I haven't listened to
it. Was that your...
It.
Oh, John... Reddy Stenellis, he's older than... He's like my age.
He graduated while I was coming in as a freshman, so I just missed that sort of wave of hipster 80s writers.
What did you do in high school? What did you do for jobs?
High school? Yeah. Mowed lawns and stuff. Worked in a library. They thought I was homeless all the time. They kept coming in and tried to kick me out. And I said, I work here. And there was this one older lady who hired me. I don't think she told anybody. Because I dressed in capes.
Yeah.
I had velvet capes. I was that kind of teenager, yeah. I didn't do the goth black eyeliner. I love The Cure, but I didn't go makeup. But I did the...
Velvet capes.
Black velvet capes, you know.
Uh-huh.
Combat boots and that type of thing.
Really?
Yeah. You know, you pre-rip the pant knees.
Sure. Yeah, yeah. Black jeans?
No, green, camo, but green, but black tights.
Oh, okay.
Because I was kind of shy. I didn't want to show
the knee.
The real, so I had black tights.
Yeah, black tights under your
very
ripped jeans.
Very with your fantasy trans sort of look. I don't know what I was going for.
That must have been a sight.
I did.
You got pictures? Any top hats in your past?
Top hats. I wore a beret for a while.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. You didn't go through a beret phase. It was the 80s. Early 80s. Berets were in. I didn't cut.
You know what I went through? I had an Afghani wool hat. You'd recognize them. They were selling them on the street in New York a lot.
Right.
They had it was wool.
Right.
And it looked like you folded
the
it
flaps.
Up. Yeah.
The Confederacy of Dunces.
Not quite flaps. Thing. No, it was sort of like, it looked like you could unroll it, but it was rolled up and it was a cap.
Okay.
But it was definitely Afghan war surplus. It was a Mujahideen hat is what it was. And
right.
I loved it. I wore hats like that.
Yeah.
No berets.
I've got a really big head, so when I find my hat, it stays for a while.
Yeah.
Because rare is the hat that fits me.
You play instrument?
I don't. I used to play trumpet, but my brother's a violinist.
Oh, yeah?
And my mom is
still?
A piano player. Oh, yeah. He's the concertmaster at Hamilton.
Hamilton, New York?
Hamilton, the Broadway
show. The show. Oh, really?
Yeah, he's been doing that for a long time.
So he's in show business, too. Lofty. The lofty part of show business. The high end.
The pit. If the pit is high.
It is high. That's some high-minded stuff. Because, if he's not in the pit, he can do some shit that nobody understands. But everybody respects.
Exactly. And you can...
That guy's good. Virtuosity.
You don't have to wear costumes.
Is he amazing?
Yeah, he's amazing.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Older or younger?
Older. He's been doing it since he was 6 years old and just, he's never had a real job. He just, his violin is paid for everything.
Prodigy?
Away. I think so. Not Juilliard, sort of that sort of.
Yeah.
You know, he was a prog rock head. So as soon as, if you play a violin,
yeah,
those guys can told you you can plug it in, then he immediately got like a transducer and got all into play, you know, because prog rock's all about that stuff.
So that was his growing up jam.
It was all Yes and UK and
Crimson,
and all that stuff.
Rush.
He went on tour with Rush.
He did. Doing what? Playing violin.
That's a lot of guys in the audience.
Yeah,
it's very
yeah.
hard to find a lady in the Rush audience.
No, ladies have been convinced by Rush guys to come occasionally.
Yes.
Yeah.
They do not sing about love and loss.
They did a documentary and they've addressed that kind
of. Yeah. They're great. They're amazing.
Wait, what'd your brother do? He played
violin.
Him?
Yeah.
Really?
He had a violin, electric violin solo.
What's his name?
Thing. Jonathan Dinklage.
Wow.
It was great. They've toured all. Yeah, he's so happy. He was so happy. But, you know, they lost Neil, so I don't think they're going
sad.
Back on yet.
Yeah. So what'd you do? You sang in the art rock mess, generally?
No.
The theater art rock mess?
No. I got into the acting.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
So that was at Bennington?
Yeah. Acting and the writing, and then you go to New York, and then you start just...
But did you take classes at Bennington?
Uh-huh.
Oh, you did? What did you major?
It was college. You know, you take classes.
I get it, man. But like, but some people don't study acting. They're just
I don't. I know. And we had a couple of really good teachers.
Yeah.
But I don't get it. I really didn't get it. And I was tired. There's a lot of people that sign up for acting class just because they're lazy and they think, I don't know what, they're not going to ever do anything with it
because
they're terrible or
right.
they're not serious about it. And they just are just sitting there and giggling or whatever it is. And they don't put it together. And,
Put it together?
I was trying to.
You like when you realize like I like to act.
You just find your the tribe.
Yes,
you've done a number of independent films. It's that feeling of just getting a head start on the tribe that you will work with.
Yeah,
like the great films you've done and I've tried to do. It's sort of you find those people early on.
Yeah,
and I'm still really close friends with those guys from college and ladies. And
are they still in the biz?
Some of them.
Yeah.
And those are, you know, we're nothing without each other. So
really?
That's what happens.
Your friends.
Yeah. Huh. I mean, yeah. And we continue to work together.
Did you?
Everybody has that Steppenwolf idea in America.
Oh, you tried to start
you know, everybody thinks if you're in the theater, you just look at the template that Steppenwolf did. Malkovich and Sinise and Laurie Metcalf and all those
I've talked to Laurie.
Yeah.
About the beginning of that.
But everybody looks at that and goes, well, I want to do that.
So you tried to put a crew together?
You do. You do it without even know you're doing it.
But did you do it like in New York?
Yeah. I me and my buddy Ian, the guy who made fun of my accent, we made a theater in Williamsburg down on right under the Williamsburg Bridge, and we tried to do that, and it just fell apart because we didn't have any heat and...
It's rough,
the
right?
The landlord threatened to kill a friend of mine. And
really?
Yeah.
What kind of productions were you doing?
Well, we were all just like drinking too much too, so we couldn't put it together. So we had like late.
So you never got a production up?
No, never. We did some poetry readings.
But you had a space.
Some bands played.
Okay.
We drank a lot.
Uh-huh.
And then we lost our minds and left, then walked away.
That was it. So you really couldn't.
Because we don't have any business sense.
Yeah, but you didn't.
Nobody who has a business sense would live in the environment in which we were.
But you never even got a show up.
No.
Like, I've talked to a lot of people.
Steppenwolf had True West. We had nothing.
Have you ever done that play?
No. But it's sort of the dream. And
That's a good one.
It's like Hamlet. It's one of those like...
Really?
Well, that Malkovich, True West is the reason a lot of guys my age
are into it. Did you see it at the Cherry Lane?
No, but I saw that American Playhouse videotape.
Oh, okay.
You know.
Yeah, yeah. That was...
But friends of mine like Ethan and Hawk and Paul Dano did it.
Ethan Hawk and Paul Dano did True West together?
On Broadway a couple years ago, yeah.
Was that the one where they were rotating people, or did they switch roles?
No, that was Phil Hoffman and John C. Reilly. Yeah,
huh.
It's just a play that everybody. It's just it's rock and roll.
It's definitely rock and roll. Yeah. You know what the best part of that play is? The toast.
Yeah, eating the toast.
Well, just smelling the toast.
Yeah,
because the whole theater starts to smell like toast.
Everybody, and since you're most people are elderly. Isn't that what you smell right before you have a heart attack?
Yeah, so there's a lot of panic.
Yeah.
Panic in the room. Stroke is happening.
Is it stroke or heart attack? One of them.
The reason
I
ask...
that's not a bad thing to smell right before you die.
No, it's not. It's nice. It's a gift.
It's a gift. It is a gift, yeah.
But the reason I ask is that, like, I think, who'd I talk to? Like, a lot of people start these troops. Like, I talked to David Harbour, and I think he put together a crew, too. But they did some shit. But I like the idea that you guys put it together.
Well, la-da-da, Mr. Harbour.
And you didn't get anything done. I like that. You're just too fucked up to get anything.
He must have had a business account guy.
No, no. Yeah, I don't know that they made any money, but they got a play up. Do you know what I mean? I don't know if they were expecting much.
They had somebody rip tickets in half.
Yeah.
We didn't have that.
Yeah. So what happens after that? What happens after the what was the name of the company? Did you at least name the troupe?
Giant. Giant Theater Company. So we had
R.I.P.
R.I.P. Giant.
Yeah.
You know, our heart was in the right place.
How many people were involved in the failure?
Just the two of us.
Oh really? Yeah. You hadn't even casted the bunch yet.
No, we found a roommate, our friend.
Shit.
Our Hyla's brother.
I like that you still consider it a theater group, a thing that happened.
People came to it. There was nothing to see, but people hung out.
Well, you just
there, like, was always people hanging out.
Oh, you had a couple events at the space. Is that what you're telling me?
It felt like Andy Warhol's factory, but nothing like it at the same time.
Exactly. Yeah.
People there to hang out.
Yeah. Drink.
And what is anybody doing anything? No.
Do you have any comedy there?
There was some comedy.
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
So what happens after that?
We could have called. You could have probably made.
I popped in. Yep, I heard.
Put us on the map.
Sure, man. Yeah, I wasn't on the map though. Hey, I hear there's
you could have done something.
Giant's doing a show. They're doing comics.
Hey.
Yeah.
Open night.
Yeah. Open night at Giant.
Open mic at Giant. Where is it?
Under the
Williamsburg Bridge. I'm good.
Yeah, well, go.
It rattled so much that you couldn't really hear
a
production of
it. Seriously?
It did, yeah.
It's like, where's this fucking movie?
Yeah, I know. It's really, we should go back there.
What happens after that?
My cough isn't COVID, don't worry.
All right.
I paid the bills. I'm a survivor. I got jobs.
Acting?
No, because fuck acting when I was young. I just didn't want to be a part of it.
Because
I knew what it meant, and I just didn't like that. And we
what when, it meant when for you or in general?
I was just coming off the financial crisis of Giant.
Yeah,
you know.
Yeah, sure.
The loss,
sure.
The economic loss of Giant.
Devastating.
Hard times. It was like
so much put in, so little.
So much put in.
Yeah.
So I thought, this is not for me.
Yeah.
So I worked in offices and did all sorts of things.
How does it come back around?
I don't know.
You don't. Did you have a rep? Did you have somebody?
No, not for.
Who pulled you back in? After...
I did. Bootstraps.
Yeah.
I went, I read for this guy, Kevin Corrigan.
Oh, yeah.
He was friends of a friend, a writer friend of mine, and he said, hey, we made this movie. You should come and read for the director, Tom DeChillo, who was Living in Oblivion.
Oh, yeah, movie. I remember, yeah.
They had done like a short film version of that, and then they were making it. So I read for Tom DeChillo, and he gave me the part. But then, you know, you do that movie, and it's great, and people see it, and then you go back to doing regular jobs. And I thought,
you didn't get an agent or anything?
No.
So you did that.
I didn't want an agent.
Yeah,
I didn't want any of that stuff. I think it's all on me. I could have done something earlier.
What was the apprehension?
Lack of control.
Yeah.
Just being told where to go, what to say.
Right.
Just stupid shit for people, for someone my size.
Oh, you were concerned that you'd be typecasted?
Probably. But I wasn't, but I think even if I was 6'2", it was just humiliating.
And acting in general, going out.
And I also have still think ambition is ugly. I'm trying to come to terms with ambition, and I think you need ambition.
I agree, that's true.
But for some reason, for me, maybe I'm older, and I just ambition. I always thought it was ugly, and there are people. The trust levels were people like that.
Look, man. I mean, some people
see it sometimes, and it's like, for what? For a part? What are you doing?
Well, sometimes that's all people have. You know, thing is that, you know, that type of focus and this idea that, you know, if you work hard, you get the stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And also that, like, you know, what it's really about is, you know, winning is that, you know, there's that is a school of thought now.
Yeah.
And what
especially people, not to be that guy, but here in LA, it's...
Yeah, but ambition is not a point of view, but it is something that will get you to a point. You know what I mean? There is plenty of people that have an insane lack of talent,
right,
but are fueled by ambition,
right,
that do okay.
I know. I like the formula, perseverance plus talent equals luck.
Yeah, that's it.
That's a good one, but it's not ambition. It's sort of like just, I don't...
Well, I think, you know, that there's a fine line between passion and,
right,
and ambition. And also, like, at some point in your head, you realize if you want to do the thing that you don't really have a choice in it.
And you're going to be found out.
Yeah.
If you're ambitious just for yourself and you're not about, you're going to be found out.
Maybe.
You're not going to be around.
Maybe. Like, you know, it's one of the big problems. Like, yeah, there are people that are very good at socializing.
Right.
And the ambitious people are the ones that know all the fucking things to do,
right,
to get you into the place you want to be. Whereas, right, people that are broken and fucking self-hating and extraordinarily talented, they're more likely to do themselves in one way or the other.
Right. Yeah.
So if you can persevere from that, out of that hole, then, yeah, you're truly gifted.
Yeah.
So there you go.
Yeah.
Without any ambition, you're gifted and you're going to have to accept it.
Well, yeah, there's also like that stupid, like you're hiding behind some false humility that's, I don't like ambition, it's ugly. But, you know, if you're like, if you have any success, you I guess you've had some sort of ambition to...
Well, I think what you said before is it's persistence. Yeah, and you want to work,
yeah,
sure.
Yeah.
And I love
work, and work is what we do. Work is life, and life is work, intertwined with what we do. And so it's hard to delineate ambition in your life being ugly and being,
right. But I think what you said is true.
Wanting something in your work because they're so intertwined.
Well, but I think what you said is true is that the scary part about the job is that you're put in a position to take opportunities that you really don't want because someone is either you know, talked you into it or you're desperate. So, you know, there's, you know, that's a big fear.
Right. Especially with actors, because you're really told what to do,
yeah,
where to stand and what to eat and what to wear. And it's just, the older you get, you just realize, that's why a lot of actors become producers or they direct,
right,
just, or they Gene Hackman it and they just leave it because they don't want to get up at 4 a.m.
At 100.
Yeah. Well,
I mean, it's not like he walked away in the prime of his fucking career.
But he would come back, though.
Yeah, sure.
A lot of actors retire, and then 4 years later, wait, I thought you retired.
He's in his 90s.
I know, but haven't heard from him.
I hear about him.
Do you? Does he call you?
No, but I grew up in New Mexico, and he's up in Santa Fe, so I just talked to somebody in Santa Fe.
With Shirley MacLaine, she's around that.
Yeah, there's a few people up there, but I talked to my buddy's girlfriend. They live up there.
Yeah.
And I asked, do you ever see Hackman? And she says, yeah, I saw him, you know, at the mobile home dealer. And he took the mobile home I wanted. I'm like, oh well, that's
shit.
A good Hackman story. His wife wanted the mobile home I wanted, and they got it. And then it turned out they didn't like it. So there you go.
He was checking out his stats on goldderby.com.
But nonetheless, ambition. But, you know, you have somehow carved your own path. What happens after Living Oblivion? And then how soon before the station agent?
Almost 10 years.
Oh, Jesus. So after Living in Oblivion, you actually lived in Oblivion?
Yeah, a little bit. No, I did odds and ends and
did
some friends made some indie movies that nobody saw. And you get a couple $100 there, here and there for doing those. And then, Living in Station Agent, Tom McCarthy.
McCarthy, I've talked to him.
Yeah, he's great. He's a good friend.
Smart guy.
Very smart. He wrote it with a couple actors of mine, and we just did it and didn't think anybody... Again, Tom knew that he was on to something, but just living in that small, box of not seeing the bigger world out there of what you're working on.
Right.
And perhaps like in a theater sense of it all.
Sure.
You just do readings in people's living rooms, and then... It was at Sundance, and suddenly everybody was laughing. You're so immersed in it, you didn't realize it was even funny.
Yeah.
Until you get an audience in there. And that was when I knew that it was going to be somewhat popular.
How much of your energy, though, early on went, you know, into, like, how much do you think this non-ambition thing and also the desire for control thing, was driven by not being, you know, not wanting to be typecast, you know, in, you know, classical dwarf roles. Do you know what I mean? Like,
yeah,
you know,
of course. I probably 100%, but yeah, that guy at that time wouldn't admit to that.
Right, right. You know, right.
Me at 24 would never admit to that.
You were just mad.
Probably. Just thinking there's something else.
Right.
Not even embracing that reality.
Right.
Trying to distance myself from that, because that's not even something I would even dare to even consider.
No.
What, playing a leprechaun or something?
No. But I mean, like, I thought you
meant a realm that I just was like not. I wouldn't.
But early on, you, I thought you were saying you wouldn't, you know, own that disposition at that time. That was the reason why you weren't.
Yeah. Oh. Yes, that's what I meant. Yeah. But now, later, that's looking obviously the reality of what it was.
But living with that reality.
But that's an excuse. Sorry.
Not it really.
It is.
I don't know. Is it?
I
mean, but do you think, like, let's say you did it differently and you took all the leprechaun roles and even a few TV commercials, you think you'd still be the same guy now?
Talking to you? I don't know. What is that?
Well, I mean, it's a difference, I guess,
that
between.
That calls into question.
What?
Every choice you make.
Absolutely.
The different paths of reality set forth.
Well, I think something in your heart knows, like, you know, when you've crossed a line or there's a line you don't want to cross. I mean, I think that, I mean, how, what, just in general, living with it, what was your experience and how you judged yourself?
Well, there are people in our line of work, in the business of show, that would do anything to be around it. Like, I've read articles about people who worked in the design shops and was like runners on movie sets to give this actor his coffee and just to be around the energy of it. I wanted nothing to do with it, you know, because that just seemed, that would just make me even more sad about it all. Back then.
Yeah.
I don't know now, but
I would assume that you probably still wouldn't want to get somebody coffee on set.
No, that takes a certain personality.
Yes, it does.
Lovely personality that I don't have. So I would just do anything else but work in the theater.
Show business, and, right. Yeah. I get it. Okay, I get it.
Yeah.
So you just kept it this. You kept it this
a distance.
This angry dream.
This angry distance from it all, and waited until they were ready.
Until the right guy, they sent the right representative.
Yeah, exactly. Oh boy, I had some winners.
Yeah.
Yeah. I can't talk about that though, because they're still. They're still
kicking.
Yeah, and they're lovely. It just wasn't the right fit, perhaps.
I mean, I don't know a lot of the movies before The Station Agent, like 13 Moons or
Alex Rockwell.
Yeah,
incredible.
Was it a good movie?
Yeah, I mean, it's hard to separate the experience of the movie from the movie. I like having a great experience making a movie, and if nobody sees it, you know, what are you gonna do? But sometimes, rarely is the thing that you have a great experience and everybody sees it and loves it.
But do you? And
that's why everybody's doing TV now, because everybody sees it.
Yeah, or somehow, if there's enough of it out there, eventually they'll see it.
I don't know why suddenly some people have so much time on their hands to watch all this stuff. There's so much stuff.
It's impossible, but it
because
does.
Because they can pause it.
Yeah, and that also exists out there in the world, especially if you're part of a huge series like you were. That, you know, that's never going to go away, ever. Yeah.
No, I don't.
Like, I might even watch it eventually, even though I pushed back against it with all of my heart.
Why?
I'm not a fantasy guy.
Wow. Neither was I. Neither am I.
No, you are now.
It's my gig. It was my job. It's just really good writing.
Yeah?
It's not really about fantasy. It's mostly people in a room talking.
Well, that's what I hear.
Occasionally dragons.
That's what I hear.
Up.
But then...
It wasn't about the dragons.
I get it. But...
No, you don't, because you haven't seen it.
No, I know, but I get what you're saying.
I always get
this
that on the street.
Argument. This
people
was the
always
argument.
Come up to me on the street. There's a whole thing. Yeah. There's a thing that people do on the street because, you know, I get recognized.
Oh, they're like, I never watched it.
Yeah, they love saying that.
Yeah.
It's like a badge of honor.
Oh.
Or they'll come up and they'll just
I'm saying with Marvel.
You are on Game of Thrones.
Yeah.
Yeah. My son liked it.
There you go.
There's no nothing. They're just there to state their case.
Yeah, state their case or...
Yeah, which you just did.
But I mean, I watch your other movies.
But,
I mean,
but you're proud of it. You're not a fantasy thing. I watch your movies.
Yeah, I know, but I watch some of your movies too. But the point is, like, I'm not trying to make a statement.
No, I know.
But I know it was a big deal. I'm actually oddly trying to be respectful and acknowledge that this
If nobody watched Game of Thrones, would you check it out?
No.
If it was counterculture.
Part of the other reason. No. Part of the other reason is the commitment. You know, like by the time, everyone was like, let's, you know, you got to do this. I'm like, you know, what am I going to, I got to start this thing now? You know, so like.
What are you doing tonight?
I didn't watch The Wire until like 10 years after.
And you watched all of it?
Yeah.
Yeah, me too. Like Breaking Bad, I was
watching that week to week.
Oh man, so good.
And then I watched it again.
I caught up about three seasons. By the third season, I watched them all.
It's just like, you're right. Maybe I need to make the time. But I'm the same way with Marvel movies in terms of fantasy. But I know that Game of Thrones is of a different mind. And it's like, and it's amazing. I know that.
I don't. It's up to you to decide that.
I believe it's true. But I have not watched it. But I hear you're great in it.
People seem to like that. Me in it saying things.
You got prizes.
Saying lines. I got some prizes.
You got the prizes.
Uh-huh. No, it was, you know, I think they got mad at the show at the end. Everybody
got mad at it because
they didn't want to say goodbye to it.
Yeah, well, that happens.
But now there's another
one
coming.
You can't win. Is another one coming?
Yeah, there's a prequel coming up.
You in it?
No. Nobody attached to the originals in it. But there's another one because it made some money. HBO's back on it, which I have an opinion about.
Yeah,
you know.
Yeah, what is it?
Just make something
different.
Make something. No, I think it's going to be a really good show because I know the director of the producer of it worked on our show. I think it's going to be really fucking good.
That's good.
But they took a risk on our show. HBO did.
Mm.
It's all under all new leadership over there now.
Yeah.
They took a huge risk on our show, and it was a slow start. But why don't they do that again?
Right.
This isn't a risk. It's a proven thing that works.
Well, they're doing it with Succession, I think.
Are they? Yeah.
I mean, that started out of nowhere, it seemed. Succession.
Yeah, another great... I love that show.
Love it.
I'm starting to go, why am I watching these people? They're so.
Well, it's because of what you said. It's because of the language.
Yeah.
I mean,
It's dialogue.
It's dialogue.
Well, you know, you can have the best idea for a show or a movie and just show me the dialogue.
That's sure.
How, you know.
Is that how you choose most things?
You got to read the dialogue, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. But I mean, like, how do you... What?
But I knew Dave and Dan. I knew especially Benioff. One of the writers for Game of Thrones.
Yeah.
I knew how good of a writer he was.
Yeah.
I wasn't familiar with Dan's writing yet.
Yeah.
Benioff was an incredible writer.
But you did a funny turn in Elf. That was a good, that was funny.
Yeah, I always like the funny.
And the station agent was great.
Oh, I always try and go for the funny.
Do you?
Yeah. I'm not being very funny right now because I've been talking about myself in this movie for 2 weeks.
We haven't even talked about the movie yet.
Maybe we won't have to. Maybe this is the interview I do where we don't have to talk about them. You're not a plug show. We don't, you know.
No, I build it around the plug.
When does this air? In like six months?
No, we'll do it. That's how you
what,
got
how do,
on
do
here.
They air? What is pod? You just press a button and they're suddenly on the internet?
This is just how I get people to come to my house. There's no airing. It's got this weird reputation.
You don't watch Game of Thrones. I don't do podcasts.
Yeah.
I still don't know what they are.
It's like a radio show. You know what it is. Yeah, people watch it.
Have people said that before? Like, what is a podcast?
Well, they don't quite say what is it anymore unless they're 90.
Well, that's me.
But even then. But you're asking me the reason why it's not a plug show is that, well, I wouldn't have been able to get you to come here without the premise being you're promoting a movie. But I don't usually do full plug movie. But I did watch the movie. But I want to talk about Station Agent for a second because that seemed to be the big turning point.
Plug the Blu-ray re-release of the Station Agent.
But McCarthy seemed to understand something that broadened your capacity, you know, as an actor and as a public person, right? I mean, he innately knew that.
Well, yeah. I mean, because we knew each other.
Yeah.
By that point, by the time we filmed, we were good friends. So I think that's such a head start on everything. And, you know, movie making is weird when you're not familiar and good friends with people.
Yeah.
Yeah, because it's fake, it's false, but when you have that experience with people and love and familiarity and shorthand changes everything, and that's what helped that movie.
It's fun that, like, and Patricia Clarkson's so great.
Yeah.
Michelle Williams is like, well, that was just so young at that point.
She was still doing Dawson's Creek at that point, yeah.
That's crazy.
We had to wrap her out to get her back.
Get her back to the kid show?
Dawson's Creek, yeah.
Did you go hang around that Worcester group at all? Did you go see that shit?
No. I saw, that was sort of before my time, and then when we got there, it was, I saw, just actually, not that, like 10 years ago, I saw a show there that Fran McDormand did. But no, not really.
Oh.
No.
I missed all that. I was too busy just being a dumb comic.
Yeah, I was sort of being just a dumb idiot. Just didn't go see a lot of plays.
Because there was like plays and there was like the end of sort of performance art was happening down there. There were still people around doing things like that performance-wise. Interesting kind of avant-garde stuff, which sort of became a mockery of itself eventually.
Yeah. I'd see a lot of comedy. Sort of
stand-up?
Yeah, comic friends.
Oh, like who?
Showalter and all those guys were
the steak. Like, you went to Stella in Time?
Stella at the Time Cafe. We went all the time to that.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
I did that once or twice. I always had a
beef. I probably saw you.
Had beef with those guys.
Yeah.
I'm okay with them now, I guess. Yeah. They annoyed me.
No, I remember it was,
Because they were.
I could, But I remember Louis would show up occasionally.
Sure.
And I remember like the, is Louis here tonight? Is Louis?
Yeah. Oh, yeah, Silverman, everybody. Janine.
Yeah, right.
Everybody. Yeah. It was a thing.
Yeah.
And that guy Blue and his band.
Yep. That was just what we would do or whatever every Wednesday for a while there.
Right.
We'd head over there, yeah.
I just remember like having been like mostly a club comic. I just, as that kind of world of, kind of nice, kind of sketch-oriented people started to populate comedy, I just resented them.
Because you were a lone wolf.
Exactly.
And did it become,
I still
like, the cool kids kind of shutting you out a little bit, or did it, what
no,
was
No, they
that?
Always wanted to involve me, but I was
not
like,
them in particular, but just comedy.
No.
Is there a,
I could have done
a hierarchy?
No, I mean, we did Luna Lounge. Did you do that, too? That was a little earlier. I was always there.
I never performed, but I would just be an audience.
Yeah, because I could go up there and yell and do what I do. But then, like, it all became very sort of like...
The ambition, though.
Hipstery.
I guess what we're talking about before.
A little of that.
Seems like perhaps...
There was something happening in terms of a community definition. Like, comics, our job is to, go out into the wild of our brain and the world and, beat ourselves up and try to process things. I had a different idea of what it was than, sort of like, we're doing this thing together.
Right.
Like, what does that mean?
It's Right.
Why?
Skits.
Yeah.
I don't do skits.
Yeah.
No, they were, but really funny skits. But
sure,
but I get it. If I was, I get it. What do you think? What's happening now with comedy, with the world we're living in now?
I think that there's a problem again with some sort of tribalization, but it's not the sort of like kind of like urbane nerd that is really
no. But being afraid to
now there's an
being afraid to. Be funny, or being afraid to say something.
Well, I think that
inappropriate, which is the basis of all.
I guess
humor.
So, but I think that that's I don't.
Not I, to be hot topic guy.
No, but I don't. Know. I don't really buy into that. I don't
right.
think you. I think you can say things, and I think you can still like if the idea the impulse is only to shock or to say something
to make an
impact.
That's not so fun. But I mean, the Great Leveler. That comics
sure,
have
but I still think that
we're all
that's
in it.
Possible.
We're all in it together.
I think I
misinterpreted.
I don't know if that's true anymore.
Right, because of
politics,
the audience, or because of the comic.
Because of politics, I think that this idea that there is a woke comedy,
right,
and an anti-woke comedy is fucking ridiculous.
Right,
and if you consider yourself anti-woke, then I think you're carrying water for right-wing propaganda.
Yeah.
And I think that you're a hack because the job is to think for yourself.
Yeah.
So
agreed.
What, if you can't find your voice in a world of diversity and respect, then, what are you really?
Yeah.
And if you can't transcend that by being, respectful yet still provocative, then, you're not really challenging yourself, are you?
Yeah.
You're right. Things evolve. I think that you can be as crass and as fucking vulgar and as fucking provocative as you want without saying a couple of words.
Right. Exactly.
You know what I mean?
Right.
It's like, you know, there's a lot of words we don't say anymore. This whole idea that we can't joke about anything has been around since, you know, the beginning of comedy.
I know. There's a lot of hypocrisy going on, I got to say, from being a somebody who's a little bit unique, front row seat to some...
Really? Like what? Like, what do you see?
Well, you know, it's really progressive to cast a, literally no offense to anything, but I was a little... taken back by the very, very, they're very proud to cast a Latino actress as Snow White.
Yeah.
But you're still telling the story of Snow
White. Snow White, yeah.
Seven Dwarfs.
Sure.
So, take a step back and look at what you're doing there.
Yeah.
I know. That makes no sense to me.
But, oh, so what?
You can you're progressive in one way, and then, but you're still making that fucking backward story of seven dwarves living in a cave. What the fuck are you doing, man? We, you know, have I done nothing to advance the cause from my soapbox? I guess I'm not loud enough. I don't know what what studio that is, but they were so proud of that, and all love and respect to the actress and to the people who thought they were doing the right thing. But I'm just like, you don't. What are you doing?
Right.
And I remember doing, I played Hervé Villechaize in an HBO film, and there was a lot of early backlash. How dare he play a Filipino? They were so liberal-minded, and I am as liberal and
sure
as anybody.
Right.
But they were so convinced because of how he looked, Hervé, that he was Filipino. Which is, if that's not racism, what else? Because he's not. He was a Frenchman, and his physical condition made him look very cherubic.
Uh-huh.
And
interesting.
I guess someone from the Far East. But they got very angry. How dare you do that?
And they didn't even have all the information.
Nothing. They just assumed.
Yeah,
And here I am hanging out with his brother, Patrick Villechaize, who was just like laughing at all of it.
Uh-huh.
Who was born and raised in France with the guy. And
well, I think that's interesting because
I'm also... If you tell the story of Snow White, it's most fucked up, cool, progressive spin on it, let's do it.
Yeah.
All in, but I just don't know.
But that has something to do with business, doesn't it? Because like...
But it's all the same world, what you're talking about.
It is, but like...
And watching ourselves and being... hypocrisy of where, you know, all of that.
But not unlike we were talking about before, is that they knew... You know, it's not unlike, you know, revivals, right? So they knew they got a cash cow with that story. Yeah. So, you know, it's...
Because people don't take risks.
Right. But the point is that, like,
they
were
great
just...
Great risk comes great reward.
Yeah, but in their mind, they're like, we got a no-brainer here.
Right.
You know, we can win by appearing to be progressive, by casting a Latina, and you know, we can just, you know run money through this story again.
Yeah.
I don't think anybody has ever probably... Other than what I just heard just now, said, you know, this is a is not, you know, the dwarf community is tired of this shit.
Is there one? I don't know.
Well, that's the thing, right? In order to seek representation, you have to have a community movement, which also is the heart of what becomes the issue of wokeness.
But it's such a minority.
I know.
And I'm not affiliated with any groups or anything, but it's such a minority that it causes a real, like, well, who the fuck cares, you know? And it's entertainment. I mean, entertainment.
Right, but I think that's also what I'm talking about, is that there's a movement on behalf of, like, anti-wokeness to get us back to who the fuck cares. Now, I'm not saying that, you know, you should, you know, stand up for your community. It's not your responsibility, and it may be relative. I don't know, would you even consider it marginalized or just not even acknowledged? You know, other than some, you know, what to call people.
Exactly. Yeah, I don't know.
The thing is like, I think in the world that, you know, anti-wokeness or, you know, anti-progressiveness sees, it's sort of like, hey, come on, everybody. Let's go back to, can't we just fuck with people?
Right. Which half my brain does.
Sure.
Because I'm about as politically non-correct.
Right.
Because of who I am, I'm maybe allowed to be a little less politically correct because I get to make fun of myself.
Yeah.
You know, I get to say the M word. You know what I mean?
You do.
M, not
I know,
N.
I know,
M.
I heard you. But again, you're in a movie now that speaks to this too, because, you know.
Speaks to what?
To casting. in a different way. You know, this is an, it's sort of an age-old story, Cyrano, which I didn't have, never seen or read. So that story was totally new to me when I watched it the other day, which was very exciting.
Yeah.
Because it's heartbreaking.
Oh, you saw the movie?
I did.
Oh, cool. You liked it?
Yeah.
Really?
Yes.
Cool.
I'm kind of, like, as I get older, and even when I wasn't older, it's like, you know, I don't, I admit that, you know, musicals move me. People in general, you know, singing or any of that.
Right.
The story, I don't run around saying I love them, but they always get me.
Do you like that, the band The National?
No.
Oh, they wrote all the songs.
It's very good, though.
Yeah, it's more of a...
Now I like them. Now I like the band, The National.
It's kind of a movie with songs. It's musicals, you sort of think, like... Big lavish numbers.
No, I guess so.
Style.
I mean, yeah, it, is,
but
a
it
mu-
is a musical. Yeah,
I mean, it's a movie with songs, but you do. There's dance numbers.
Yes. I don't dance.
Basically, no, you don't.
That's
but
true.
Like,
there are choreographed dance numbers.
Yes.
So I guess it is a musical. No, I. It was originally a stage play, and Erica Schmidt, the adapter of the original Rostand play, French play from about 120 years ago, she had the great idea. All right, this show is done all the time. It's been done for 100 years.
And the movie with Steve Martin was Roxanne.
Yeah.
And then there was a movie with Gerard Depardieu.
Which is great.
Yeah, I hear that.
And it'll be done 100 years from now.
Yeah.
We're not the first or last version of the story.
Right.
So with that, you can kind of unearth it a bit and go, all right, what do we do with this one? Like Roxanne, like Steve Martin did.
Yeah.
Let's make it a pure comedy. But what she did was she said, well, what if we take away its most famous attribute? What if we take away the nose?
Right.
And what are you left with?
Yeah.
You're left with the same heart, but but no nose.
Yeah.
And for me, I never really associated with the play growing up. I was more, obviously, like we said, Sam Shepard.
Yeah.
Because I always thought it was this handsome actor and a fake nose.
Yeah.
And when he wrote it 120 years ago, I'm sure it was great and the crowds went wild. And
yeah.
It was like, oh, what's up? It was probably one of the first known prosthetics used.
Yeah.
It's probably maybe even controversial to some. What are you doing? But now it's just, what the fuck are you griping about, this big nose? It doesn't seem, and the actor got to take it off at the end of each performance.
Yeah.
Put it on his little nose hook in the dressing room.
The nose hook.
Wherever he kept it.
I like a nose hook.
A nose hook. But he could do that. And I just thought, nah, it's just, I know theater and film, it's false, it's make-believe, it's pretend, but...
Uh-huh.
Growing up, I needed that to be connected real on a guttural, visceral level with something.
Of course.
And it was just too theatrical to me. I didn't like it, any of it. But then Erica got rid of it because she didn't write it for me, but she got rid of the nose and she added these songs, got the band to add these songs. I just thought that was a smart way in.
Yeah.
And
very.
I lobbied for the part and she let me play the part and... My size is not a substitute for the lack of a nose. It's just sort of, perhaps I was drawn upon stuff.
Yeah.
In terms of feeling insecure about yourself on bad days. And, but no, it spoke to everybody suddenly.
But yeah, but also like, you take away the prosthetic and you take away that device, which makes it kind of asks for comedy.
Of course it does.
And
it also, you subconsciously as an audience member, I've found, are judging the character just like all the other characters are judging him because it's just a big nose. And you're kind of, it's fake and...
Yeah, and it's sort of...
You're in on the joke and the actor is in on the joke with you, like...
Right.
Almost winking at the audience, like, look at my big nose. Oh.
But what's interesting about this movie is that you don't ask any real questions about how or why you are what you are.
Right.
Is that, you know, you show up and you're clearly you,
right.
But your intellect and everything is already intact.
Yeah.
And the swordsmanship and all that stuff, because you put the work in to figure out how to do that. Mm-hmm. It's all sort of like, well, this guy's just a badass.
Right.
Period.
Yeah.
And no one's going to fuck with this guy.
Right.
You know, like you're like, it never appears comedic in that way.
No.
It's heartbreaking from the very beginning because it's just purely human.
You can't play the comedy of anything, really.
No, but I could see what you were saying that, you know, to keep returning to the nose after a certain point, it just becomes frozen in time. It becomes a tradition. It becomes silly. And you have to suspend a whole lot of disbelief just in order to get to the humanity of the play.
Right. And I thought, if this guy is really heroic in everything in his life except for love... That's really cool, too. That's very, because heroes usually in films are, you know, heroic across the board. With in battlefield, comes back with the woman, and never, you know, he's heroic all the time.
Yeah, but just
to be completely at the mercy of love.
It was
great.
Is that a choice that you made to how in terms of playing it?
I like that he's cowardly in one aspect.
Well, but that's what I'm asking you. I mean, the story is the story, but when you were deciding how to make choices around playing him,
well, I think it calls into question a lot of about what is love,
baby.
But truly, it's love. It's almost like if Roxanne professed her love to him, he wouldn't know what to do in a way. It's like people who are in love with the idea of love. What the fuck is love?
Yeah.
Is love, is there such a thing as love at first sight, or is that just chemicals and sex and attraction? Does love come later? What is it? What is it? Is it possible to sustain it for a lifetime?
That's what the movie's about.
Is it? Right.
Yeah.
But it's more about that initial, keeping that initial thrill.
Right.
And how do you sustain it, you know, in an Emily Bronte sense of it all, like people who have this notion of what it is.
Yeah.
It's very old school Catholic, you know, about like loving God and giving your life to something, but you're not even aware of what it is truly that you're bowing down to. I think a lot of people don't like to apply love to reality. They like to keep them separate, and that's what Cyrano does. I don't know. I mean, you know, what are they going to move in together? As soon as Roxanne starts snoring, Cyrano going to still be in love with her? Still being written poetry about her? I don't know.
Well, I think what you bring up is interesting about, you know, belief and about loyalty and about decision. You're choosing,
right?
You know, to live in that elevated state of, you know, whatever it may be, love, obsession.
But also, if you're lying to that person, he's lying to Roxanne. He sets up this elaborate catfish with Christian.
Yeah, but she sort of instigates. She initiates that. I mean, her feeling.
It's her.
No, but her feeling for him, however naive it may have been, was where it started. You stepped in because she asked you. I mean, it isn't just.
Have you ever been? Sorry to interrupt. Have you ever been close friends with a woman?
No.
No, that you were attracted to.
Yeah.
But they weren't.
Yes.
We all have.
I think that's, you know, after a series of those is where my friendships with women sort of took a hit.
Right. Cyrano doesn't take a hint. Because he's been friends with Roxanne for a long time. And if she doesn't realize that. He also didn't.
In love with her. That if he, she doesn't really. Yeah, but, you know, just like he saw her, she sees him in a different way.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because the familiarity is your biggest enemy there.
Right. Yeah.
How do you shift that?
Have you gone back and become friends with those women?
Well, I mean, you know,
After time fizzles or whatever.
Well, it happened throughout my life at different points, you know, where. But I always blame myself.
Of course.
So, you know, I mean, I don't know if I've. Like, I have a few women friends, but not many.
Were you quiet about it? Or did you tell them right away, like an actor, like myself would?
No, I was just quietly, you know, obsessed and you know, overcompensating. And,
right.
You know, and then it just, you know, none of them were, did I have it at an age where, you know, I would, you know, maintain the relationship. I mean, it's been tricky for me in general. To, you know, maintain friendships and by and large. Yeah, I have a few friends.
Yeah, well, how many friends do you need, though? People have too many.
I know, I have a bit about that. You need two. You need the main guy and the guy you go to when you drain the main guy. Hey, man, I'm having this problem. You're tired? I'll call the other guy.
I've lost some friends over the years.
Yeah.
Just because I'm tired of listening to them.
Sure. It's all about them
and the problems.
I definitely have those.
You feel resentful, like, wait, what about my shit, man? You're not, you know.
Yeah, well, like, it depends.
I had to walk away from some of those.
Yeah, and then did you ask yourself, why am I the guy that they do that to?
Yeah, that's on me, too.
Yeah, I mean, I mean 100%. That's... 100%. My dad's a famous self-involved rambling man. But anyway, so...
I love that Kris Kristofferson song.
It's one of the best.
Self-involved rambling. Man.
Yeah, it's not even that sad.
It's not.
It's tiring. It goes on.
It's like, an entire side of an album.
Yeah, we get the
point.
And
then you flip over the album, you think it's over, but it's still going.
Still there. He's still talking about something he don't give a shit about himself.
Right.
Yeah, most songwriting might fall into that.
Yeah, I guess so.
But
shut up already with the the singing about it.
Yeah, I'm more of a melody guy than a lyric guy. Give me the riff. I want to know the riff. I don't need to hear the talking.
That's why you don't know what most people are singing about.
But
excuse me while I kiss this guy.
Yeah. Wait, is that what he's saying?
What?
Yeah.
Oh man, just, here, smoke this.
Yeah. Doesn't matter, man.
It doesn't matter.
We're on a rocket.
His guitar's
and he's
upside
holding
down.
It. But
am I upside down or is Jimmy's guitar?
It all is, man.
Did you ever listen to The Dead? Were you ever a Deadhead?
I like.
I was never a Deadhead.
I wouldn't say I was a Deadhead, but I did have. I do have an appreciation for the Dead.
I see. I guess at a young age, when you're doing the prog rock, if you don't sleep.
That's like anti-dead.
Yeah. I was anti-dead, man.
I get it.
I was pro-life. No, that doesn't sound right. Not that.
but to speak to the movie, like, you know, the choice to cast you, which I thought was genius. And then I imagine in the classic telling of the story, Christian is not a black man. So that was a choice.
Yeah, but he's quite often played like an idiot. And we, it's funny because
is that true?
An idiot.
Oh, wow.
You're a handsome idiot. But,
yeah.
This version that Erica created, she never saw him as that. She created a very kind person,
who was aware of his flaws.
Yeah.
And his shortcomings.
And just so, the opposite.
She doubled the heartbreak.
Yeah. But I think what it speaks to is if you meet a really sweet, kind person, your first thing is like, I'm not sure that person's very smart. Because I think we equate kindness with
suckers.
Lack of intelligence.
Weak.
Yeah. And like cynicism and darkness with intelligence.
Yeah, that's true.
You know, it's the old, I think it's like a Seinfeld thing of like, if you ever want to look smart, you just seem like frustrated or something.
And then I look like a fucking genius all the time. I fool some people. Hey, you're a genius. No, I'm not. I'm just anxious and aggravated. Don't misread me.
About my cornflakes.
Yeah, exactly.
That got soggy.
Sure, exactly.
So fucking angry.
The day is done.
The day is done.
It's fucked.
So dark.
Breakfast was a disaster.
Still holding on to
it. Yeah. 2 days later.
But that's what they did. And with Kelvin, the actor who plays Christian, he does it so beautifully.
Yeah, it's great.
Yeah.
It really was. I mean, I do like watching those things, and I do start to think about how many of these kind of period piece musicals are just tragic as fuck.
Yeah.
But because they're musicals, you're like, it makes it so different. The singing makes it different.
You forgive everything.
Well, it actually delivers the goods of tragedy in a way that you can absorb. You know, because like the tragic ending in general. Mm-hmm. You sort of want to avoid it because that we're all headed there.
Right.
But when it's about love and broken hearts and unrequited love and stuff like, I get the tension of that. But I think that when there's song and when, it is elevated in that way, you can process it differently and enables you to have feelings that you might not have been able to handle if it was just straight up sad.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, you mean it? That doesn't mean it's softer, though, right? That doesn't mean it's like easier it's just, to more palatable.
No, but like as I get older, I'm like, I don't know if I want to watch it if it's going to be devastating. I don't feel like dealing with it. Do you know what I mean?
Sure.
And this is an emotionally devastating classical story, and I imagine that the original is played with some humor, right?
Yeah.
Where this is like it's not played with humor, but because of the music. You actually you experience it in a deeper way. I don't think
there's some humor to it, but the music does lift it out of the quagmire of the tragedy quite often, and that's and then musicals. I like some of them.
Yeah, sort of a sucker for I don't watch a lot of them, but when I find myself doing it, I get very emotional right away just because people are singing.
Right. Of course.
I don't know why.
And like Stephen Sondheim.
Yeah.
Rest in peace.
Yeah.
I mean, then not the Tim Burton version, but when Sweeney Todd came along, that just sort of.
Yeah.
That was like a True West moment and for me with musicals.
Oh, yeah?
Because it was not your average musical
narrative. Yeah, yeah.
This is a musical about a guy who slits people's throats out of revenge and makes meat pies out of them.
Mm.
I'm all in.
Yeah.
I'm so in. And it's brilliantly done with music that gives you goosebumps.
Yeah.
The writer, Emerald Fennell, just did a version of Cinderella with Andrew Lloyd Webber. And they redid the whole thing. Made Prince Charming gay. The whole 9 yards.
Oh, maybe she should be the one to take on Snow White.
It's great. Yeah, she's forward.
Gotta deal with this fucking.
She's forward thinking, man.
Yeah.
No, we're working on a Rumpelstiltskin right now.
Really?
Yeah, that's gonna hopefully change the wheel a little bit.
Blow some minds.
I hope so.
Rumpelstiltskin's back,
dude.
Great talking to you.
But nobody knows that story, so we can do anything.
Yeah, why not?
Is that it? We're done?
Yeah, unless you got a closing thoughts.
Sorry.
I'm just sad that that I don't have I usually give people a mug, and I'm out of them, and I'm going to have to get you a mug at a different time. That's my big sadness.
I don't know. Now's mine.
No, like an actual WTF mug. Oh. You can get a Paris mug in New York, but I appreciate you licking it like that would somehow like, oh, no. Dinklage licked the cup. You got to take it home. All right, buddy.
Just a little bit of
have fun.
COVID.
And how long are you going to be in
I don't know.
LA?
It's all a jet lag.
You here for a little while?
Just a week.
Okay. Well, have fun out there.
Thank you. Thank you, everybody out there.
There you go.
Podcast land.
That's it. Peter Dinklage. Cyrano will get a wide release in theaters beginning February 25th. Peter is nominated for the Critics' Choice Award for Best Actor. It was very exciting and fun to talk to him. I hope I can do my shows this week. You will know if I can't. I feel all right. I feel like I could, but you know, I can't go out there in the world without a negative test. So if you don't hear from me, all systems go. Or somebody. You know it is, but you know what's up. I don't even know how many of you are listening now. I'm going to try some finger picking, distorted finger picking on my electric guitar. It's very hard for me to stay focused. Generally, it's not a COVID thing. Monkey and LaFonda, cat angels everywhere. It's close. I've been working on my finger picking. Very simple.